Welcome to the Cybersecurity Defenders Podcast, episode number 208. My name's Christopher Luft. I'm one of the co-founders of Lima Charlie, and I will be your host. On today's episode, we're going to be chatting with Gabe Garrett and Blake Hershley from Mori Associates. On today's episode of the Cybersecurity Defenders Podcast, we're going to be speaking with a couple of team members from Mori Associates, a leading firm with over 25 years of experience in delivering comprehensive solutions across technology, communication, and space mission support. Specializing in scalable, high-impact technologies, the company addresses current challenges while anticipating future needs, contributing to a more connected, efficient, and secure future. Mori Associates has played pivotal roles in supporting missions to Earth orbit, the Moon, and beyond, contributing to groundbreaking projects that advance both terrestrial applications and interstellar explorations. Our first guest is Gabe Garrett, Senior Vice President of Space and Defense at Mori Associates. With nearly two decades of experience in the aerospace and defense industries, Gabe leads strategy, growth, and operations across key civil defense accounts. Before joining Mori Associates, he served as Account Vice President at SAIC, overseeing the Human Space Exploration and Operations Solutions Division. Gabe's extensive background includes leadership roles at Engility Corporation and engineering experience with spacecraft, launch vehicles, and mission systems at Ares Corporation. Our other guest is Blake Hershey, Chief Growth Officer at Mori Associates. Blake is a visionary entrepreneur known for his passion for creating products that enhance lives and drive positive behavioral changes. With a track record of transforming concepts into successful multi-million dollar ventures, he brings extensive expertise in business development, including finance, operations, marketing, product innovation, and strategic planning. His leadership has been instrumental in driving significant revenue growth at Mori Associates over the past several years. Blake has also been recognized by Forbes Next 1000 for his entrepreneurial achievements. Thank you both so much for being here with us on the show today. It's an incredible honor, and that's got to be the longest introduction I've ever read on the show.
Oh, you make it sound a lot more important than I think we are, Chris, but pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chris.
Yeah, it's a fascinating space you guys operate in, and that actually brings me to the question I usually like to ask people at the beginning, and maybe Gabe, I'll start with you. How did you first get interested in space and engineering in this move towards high technology? Were you a kid that grew up in front of a computer, or did you find it a little bit later in life?
You know, it's interesting. At a young age, I always had an interest for space missions, but not a lot of access to actually, you know about them, right? I mean, this was some time ago. But, you know, as I went through school, I thought the space shuttle program was really cool. You know, astronauts were neat. And at one point in time, I wanted to be an astronaut. You know, I think I still may apply to be one just to get the letter that says, sorry, you didn't make it, right? But I could hang it up in my office or something. But no, just always thought it was neat. And then when I got to college, pursued aerospace engineering at University of Texas in Austin, and that kind of solidified it. So, you know, got the degree and then got into the business starting in the human space flight arena, but have kind of dabbled between defense and civil space throughout my career. But yeah, kind of a lifelong space geek, I guess.
Very cool. And Blake, what brought you into technology? Was that the hunt for riches? You're more of an entrepreneurial.
Oh, you know, I also wanted to be an astronaut growing up. In Gabe grew up in Texas. I grew up in Michigan. So that dream is very far away from me. But my grandfather actually was an aerospace engineer at BorgWarner. And, you know, he passed away about a decade and a half now. But my grandmother gave me his yearbook from college. And I opened it up and there's a letter from Lockheed Martin thanking him and the family for all the efforts that they put into a big engineering project that they bid to NASA. So it really felt like maybe it was just like, you know, destiny to get involved in some capacity. When I graduated college, I entered management consulting and kind of segued into the technology side of that. And that's where I really started having an appreciation for tech. You know, growing up as a millennial, playing video games, computers, you know, you had one computer, you had a computer room when we grew up, right? So I was always interested in technology. And once I saw how aerospace was utilizing technology, it seemed like a pretty clear path to, you know, get into the contracting services for aerospace.
That's very cool. My grandfather was a mathematician, and I'd like to think that I honor him by having studied computer science, but I don't think he would see it that way. So
it's applied math, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he did topology and these weird sort of new fields of mathematics, so very abstract. For listeners unfamiliar with Mori Associates, can you give us a brief overview of what the company does, particularly in the realm of IT management and cybersecurity?
Sure. So we were founded in 97, aerospace technology company, IT management. So that's pretty much all the infrastructure that goes into cloud, data centers, defensive cyber. We support mission control center infrastructure, high performance computing, and then, of course, general cybersecurity. And then, you know, with Gabe's addition to the team, amongst some other very experienced folks, we're branching out into a multidisciplinary engineering. Our core partner is NASA today. So we support all NASA centers, including NASA headquarters. But we have a large centers of gravity at NASA Johnson Space Center, where Gabe is based, and at Jet Propulsion Laboratories out in Pasadena, California. And, you know, from a cybersecurity strengths perspective, you know, we provide cybersecurity for critical NASA missions and infrastructure, 24/7 threat monitoring, incident response, endpoint protection, security operations center at JPL, and then the use, application, and tailoring of tools like Splunk, SentinelOne, and machine learning for proactive threat detection.
Very cool. And why is cybersecurity for space assets so critical in today's technological and geopolitical landscape?
That's a good question. It's important for a lot of different reasons. Your satellites power GPS, weather, internet, communications, space domain awareness, and national defense. Nation states and cyber criminals are increasingly targeting space systems with the goal to disrupt things that we rely on in everyday civilian life, what the government relies on for operations, and what we rely on for military operations. In 2022, the Russian cyber attack and Viasat disrupted European satellite internet. That will happen again. It's just a question of when. You know, SpaceX, Starlink, and NASA faced attempted and successful intrusions. And then, of course, there's a doomsday scenario of, you know, spoofing our radar systems to make us believe that we're under attack, preempting the U.S. to launch on warning, leading to global nuclear war. I'm not a conspiracy theorist by any means. I've just heard discussions around this. So as far as the realism is concerned, that's above my pay grade and scary level.
Yeah, and it's terrifying in the sense that I spoke to another guy on the show who was telling me that Amazon Web Services offers ground control services that are being used by some of these commercial satellite outfits. So in theory, you could have an attacker get into an organization from a fish, you know, somebody clicks on an email, pivot over to the infrastructure, end up controlling a satellite, which is kind of wild. I'm sure you guys are more locked down than that, but the whole thing is something to think about. Gabe, can you explain some of the unique challenges involved in protecting space-based assets such as satellites or mission-critical systems?
Yeah, sure. You know, and I think I'll start just by saying that, you know, I've personally been involved in some of the risk management and safety activities across NASA for, you know, almost 20 years now. And what's interesting is that, you know, they are now looking at cyber as, you know, a top risk. And that wasn't always the case. There was always, you know, micrometeoroids and other things like that that were of concern. But yeah, cyber is a big deal. And I would say, you know, it's a big deal across the full space enterprise. So, you know, with space, you've got civilian space, NASA, NOAA with the weather satellites. You've got defense space and military space, and you've got space that supports the intelligence community. It's an issue across all of those. But I think the civilian agencies take a big part of the attack just because they're more well-known, right? People know what their assets are. They know what the, you know, the human spacecraft are. They know what all the weather satellites are. So you tend to hear about those in the news, right, trying to be attacked. As far as, you know, what's unique about it in the world of cybersecurity, there's a few things, right? One is that a lot of the bigger programs or missions take a really long time to develop. And, you know, at least nowadays, we are designing cybersecurity measures, you know, in the design phase of these projects. But the issue is that if a project takes, you know, 15 years to go from, you know, concept to deployment, sometimes those methodologies are already obsolete, you know, because of the evolving threats. So there's that issue. The other issue is that, you know, these, once they're launched, they're in space, right? So you can't, you know, you can't patch it or swap out a piece of hardware usually. So that's a problem. It's just, you know, as far as being able to get access to the asset. Also, if you think about a space mission, as far as the, you know, the segments of a space mission, right? You've got the ground segment. So that's the you know, some facility that typically commands and controls the space asset. You've got the actual spacecraft or satellite that's in space. It's the space segment. You've got the link, right? The link segment. So the connectivity between the ground and the space asset. And then you've got nowadays more and more a larger user segment, right? So all the people that might utilize the data, whether it's passive or in some cases, back and forth. And so you're really protecting four domains in that sense. Traditionally, all of the focus has been on the ground station, right? You know, how do you protect that facility that's sending commands? And that's still, I would say, probably the biggest area where people focus. But there are some new measures going out nowadays where they're trying to put actual cyber mitigations on the actual spacecraft. And so the reason for that is that you can detect it more real time. You're not waiting on a downlink to reach the ground station to see if you might have a problem. The satellite can actually detect it. So there's some new technologies, which we'll probably talk about that a bit later. But as far as, sort of other unique things, this one's not really unique, but supply chain, that's another vulnerability for spacecraft. So, where are you building them? You mentioned the Amazon Web Services or the Amazon GovCloud. Who all has access to that, and can they put in a malware or something like that? So you're having to watch the supply chain and all the usual threats as well.
That's really interesting to make the decision to put sort of autonomous security stuff on the actual satellites, because I know computation so expensive and power so limited in these systems that it must be a serious threat to start pulling some of that limited power away.
Yeah, I would say that concept is pretty new, but there's definitely a lot of testing around that, including, using AI and machine learning so that while you've got that system up in space, it can actually learn as it receives threats and adapt real time. So that's kind of the cutting edge, I would say. But a lot of the effort is still focused around securing the ground segment. And then there's a lot of emphasis around the user segment. Like if you think about GPS, it's got a massive user segment. The entire, almost the entire world uses it. But typically it's just passive, right? We receive our position coordinates to our cell phone or whatever. But, now with satellite phones and, direct-to-satellite capability for telephones that are starting to evolve, now you've got this two-way linkage. And that's another vulnerability that's been created through that, for bad actors to leverage it.
So how does Maury Associates stay ahead of emerging cyber threats in space exploration and operations?
Gabe, do you mind if I take this one?
Oh, go ahead.
So, from foundationally, you need to have a great, strong cyber posture. So that's 24/7 security operations center. On top of that, leveraging threat intelligence to anticipate emerging attacks. Dave was talking about, the civil space agencies getting more news and being attacked more often. They're very large soft targets. Military hardware, military space assets have a different level of rigor around them. So in JPL, for instance, we see a lot of false positives. And, this is an order of magnitude of tens of thousands. And it's hard to weed through all of those. So what we've been employed is script automation for common faults and tickets to reduce the backlog, and then use automatic triaging for the real issues to get them to the right people as quickly as possible. And then, implementing DevSecOps to embed security in every stage of, IT build and development. And then, a lot of it comes down to the human, the psychology, right? Training, guidance, threat bulletins for the teams, for your customers and your own employees to make sure that everyone is aware of what the emerging threats are, what to look for in those signals, and, stay ever vigilant.
Gabe mentioned AI and machine learning on the satellites. Are you guys using that in your operations for efficiency and faster response times or anything like that?
Yeah, so we use ML models to detect the subtle non-signature-based threats. And then, the automation, which I would say is at the very bottom of the maturity curve, has a lot of applicability. We also automate actions like devices isolation, IP blocking through SOAR playbooks, predictive threat detection. So, we use Splunk machine learning toolkit to formulate and implement predictive models. AI acts as like a mission critical immune system that helps respond, detect and respond faster than humans.
How do you balance the need for high availability and performance with the very stringent requirements you must have around some of these systems?
That's a good question. You know, we leverage hardware-based encryption to reduce latency in secure communications. Schedule updates during planned maintenance and off-peak hours. Very important. Designing lean, efficient security solutions for legacy and low-power systems. You know, security is engineered to enhance reliability and not slow it down. So, you know, other things are, you know, utilization of Kubernetes and containerization with a DevSecOps-informed architecture.
Okay. Is there any specific projects or missions where these cybersecurity measures made a significant impact? Or are you allowed to talk about any of that?
I think you're talking at a high level. So, like I said, NASA and JPL are, you know, large, big, soft targets. We've supported over 25 missions at JPL, including Perseverance, Insight, OSIRIS-REx. Through those, we've detected more than 10,000 threats. And we've, you know, played a key role in keeping the critical data and communication systems secure during the landings, the data transmissions, and the ongoing science ops.
Yeah, I imagine a lot of nation states look at NASA and wonder how that technology is made.
And certainly IP stealing is an important thing. There's, you know, cyber attacks for, you know, denial, disruption, destruction, but also for IP theft to get their own aerospace programs accelerated.
And Gabe, what lessons have you learned from supporting NASA missions like MAVEN or Insight that could apply to other industries?
Yeah, well, I think the big lesson that's being learned, or maybe is learned, is that, you know, it's best to integrate the security measures in the design phase, right? It's no longer a, you know, a bolt-on type thing. We need to think about how we're going to protect the spacecraft and the ground systems, you know, as we're designing it. So that's a key lesson, I think, that we're seeing generally across the space industry. As Blake talked about, you know, 24/7 monitoring, but trying to automate that, right? As much automation as we can, and being flexible, because the threat, you know, the threat of cybersecurity is, I would say, evolving much faster than probably the mitigation techniques we have for spacecraft. So just being able to keep up with that and being flexible in how we protect assets, those are some of the key items from my perspective. Blake, did you want to weigh in or?
You know, you hit the big ones, but you know, also the human factor, clear communication between the cyber teams, the mission owners. See something, say something. That's a big motto at our SOC. And I know that it's yielded, helped avoid and mitigate, you know, some things that could have been considerable cyber intrusions.
You both mentioned like how fast this area is changing and the security threats. Are there trends that you're seeing specific to space cybersecurity? And how do you see it evolving over the next decade as we push more and more stuff into space?
Well, I could start on that one. You know, I think, as we've said a few times, it's cyber in general is being taken very, very seriously now for all space systems. And you've got, you know, the controls are being mandated, right? You know, there's a policy and other guidance where, you know, developers of spacecraft, whether they're government or commercial, you know, have to build in certain measures into their spacecraft. And as we talked a bit about earlier, too, a new trend is not just focusing on the ground segment, you know, looking more at the user segment and also the link segment. You know, hacking a link is, you know, pretty sophisticated, but, you know, a nation state could probably pull that off, right? And then you run into, you know, the encryption proper, et cetera. And then, you know, the last, it's not really a trend yet, but I think it's kind of in the early stages, is actually building some of the measures into the spacecraft itself, which we talked about a bit earlier, to look at the threats more in a real-time fashion. Blake, did you have any to add?
You know, I think you covered it pretty well, but I would say, you know, rises in space ransomware is actually becoming a much more threat scenario. And then, you know, there's a lot of news recently with, like, you know, Microsoft and NVIDIA developing very powerful chips for quantum computing. And that's, you know, emerging as potential security solution, but also security vulnerability when you're utilizing quantum, for instance, computation to try to break 256-bit encryption. It's very scary because that's, you know, pretty much what the entire security
financial system.
beyond that. But, you know, those are still, you know, quantum's been, what, 10 years away for 40 years. So I think we are much, much closer now. And then, you know, also AI, you know, we use that defensively. It can be used offensively as well. You know, we've seen deep fakes and, other disruptions during, election cycles. We don't hear a lot about it used from an offensive standpoint, at least in the news. But I will anticipate that, in the next half decade, that's going to be more common.
We're seeing so many private sector companies pushing into space, and I imagine that's only going to grow exponentially. Do you think the private sector is prepared to address the increasing cyber threats of space? And if not, what needs to change?
Large companies, SpaceX, Amazon, they're investing heavily in cyber defenses. Many smaller satellite companies are behind in cyber readiness. And as we see commercial space burgeoning and we see more private equity, venture capital going into that, that needs to be a focus in the forefront. There are obviously a lot of filters that companies have to get past in order to get certified for flight. So, part of that is having the FAA and NASA being very diligent and really defining what the security posture and capabilities must be for these smaller companies. And then, there's insurance and liability concerns that will also likely drive improvements. So, yeah, Gabe, anything from you?
Well, I think you hit the high points, but it's a focus across the board. And, I think it's all hands on deck to protect these assets. And we just, it's exciting that space is being utilized more and more, right? For basically everything we do now has some aspect to it that leverages space almost. So yeah, I think it's, everyone is doing what they can to stay ahead of it.
You mentioned insurance. I was once told by somebody that it's going to be the financial liability that drives change, not government legislation. So these things are expensive. It's going to make things happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially the capitalist market. Right now we don't really have a unified standard for satellite cybersecurity. And, I do think that's essential, similar to like the NERC CIP and energy or HIPAA and healthcare. So that is obviously, government policy. But you have to be certified for flight. So the government still controls what assets are going into space. So I think they need to define a standard that everyone must follow.
So what excites you guys the most about the work Maury Associates is doing in this space right now and maybe even the future?
Well, as a fan of the space utilization in general, it's exciting to see the expansion there, right? Through, governments and even more governments, right? We're seeing more countries get involved. But really the push in commercial space is just so exciting with, smaller companies getting involved. We're doing missions to the moon with commercial companies. There's just a lot going on. But being able to, from a cyber perspective, protect those missions and protect those endeavors, that's exciting to me just because it, protecting it is going to further enhance the pursuits we do in space as the United States, but also as, the world, right? So yeah, that's what I'm excited about. Blake?
Yeah, I kind of look at things like the 100-year view and like the 10,000-year view. And we are just learning how to build a boat and get off the Fertile Crescent right now. I would love to be alive 10,000 years from now when we've settled other celestial bodies, other solar systems. But the next best time to be alive, in my opinion, is right now. The commercial space is accelerating the velocity of flights, decreasing the costs. So we are seeing a lot more launches, a lot more exploration, a lot more commercial innovation. And then from the government side, they are increasing the amount of missions. It's taking more prevalence, not only on the civil side, but also on the military and DoD side. And, playing a part in supporting these missions is just absolutely incredible. It's what gets me up in the morning every day. And, as Gabe said, protecting from invisible threats is something that's very exciting for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And lots of our listeners think space is very cool and they're in cybersecurity. If they wanted to move their careers towards, or if they're starting their careers, end up in, cybersecurity around space and space systems, is there any advice you'd have? Should they be studying engineering alongside of cybersecurity or?
I think that if they're in computer science, it's the right place to be. Networking is critical and will be ever more critical in understanding cloud security as well. There's a lot of demands for that, and the government is moving and has moved and continues to go further into the cloud. And they get hands-on experience with tools. You know, I'd mentioned a couple of tools that we use. The tool ecosystem does change, but, you know, Splunk, SentinelOne, AWS are going to be used for a long time to come, and, you know, learn how to use Python, I would say. And then, you know, there's certifications, Security Plus, CCH, AWS, Cloud Practitioner, all those things help you stand out when you're trying to get a job at Mori and our contemporaries. And don't be intimidated by the space part. Yeah. Like, as I'm sure a lot of the listeners that are in security today, they've used Splunk, they use AWS, SentinelOne. Those applications for the space elements are not a large leap. Be motivated, be directed, and just get after it.
Awesome. So for anybody listening who wants to learn more about Mori Associates or get involved with any of your initiatives, how should they go about doing that?
You guys can find us at moriassociates.com, M-O-R-I. We're also on LinkedIn. You can explore NASA internships or contractor roles within the space. We do have a job board if you're looking for positions. You know, maybe attend space cybersecurity conferences as well. So
awesome. And I'm going to throw one at you that isn't in the notes, but I ask it of everybody that comes on the show. It can be as wide or as narrow as you want. Do you have any predictions for the future of cybersecurity?
Ransomware in orbit is coming. Governments will be creating clearer cyber rules and norms for space ops. And I think the AI will become the front line in detecting and responding to threats.
Yeah, the AI was where I would go. Let computers protect computers.
Yeah, I feel like the future is going to look a lot like a William Gibson novel where we have AIs fighting AIs in the background and a bunch of different splinter nets across the globe.
That's a good analogy. I always think of Asimov.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, thank you so much, both of you, for taking the time to come talk to us on the show here. Very cool topic. Everybody loves it whenever I get anybody around space on the show. So I'm sure this will be received widely. I will link all the stuff you mentioned in the show notes. And yeah, hopefully we'll get you back on one time to talk about mining asteroids or something cool when that starts to happen.
We would love that. Chris, you're awesome. Thank you very much for inviting us on your show.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. It was great.
All right. Take care. And that concludes this episode of the Cybersecurity Defenders podcast. If you have any feedback or ideas for future topics, please send an email to defenders@limacharlie.io. You can access the intel we talk about on the show in real time and join the conversation on the Lima Charlie Community Slack channel at slack.limacharlie.io. If you've enjoyed the show, please consider sharing it with someone or leaving a rating or review. And don't forget to subscribe on whatever platform you're listening from. Thanks for listening in. We'll see you on the next episode.